This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
Today, WikiLeaks begins its release of 5,000 emails documenting the private lives and private lies of private spies. Over the last 10 years, the private intelligence industry has boomed in the United States and in other countries and is now a real factor in world affairs. But with its growth, there has not been a commensurate growth in accountability mechanisms that should be investigating and controlling these organizations, like the controls that are placed on, believe it or not, there are some, on government intelligence organizations and military intelligence organizations. This particular release concerns a US company, Stratfor, which describes itself as a global intelligence organization. Internally, it describes that its goal is to be the number one intelligence organization in the world and to teach US intelligence agencies how to become like them.
That is Julian Assange, the editor-in-chief at WikiLeaks, announcing the first batch from a treasure trove of 5 million emails hacked from the private intelligence agency Stratfor. Stratfor is based in Texas. It hires senior U.S. intelligence agents and draws up plans for the American Air Force and Marines and big corporations. Stratfor publishes a newsletter costing thousands of dollars with 300,000 subscribers, many of them in governments around the world. According to the emails, the company also holds private consultations and undertakes spying operations, even subversion, of public interest and political groups on behalf of major corporations. For example, Stratfor was hired by Coca-Cola Company to investigate PETA, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, and their operations in Canada. The soft drinks company was a major sponsor for the Vancouver 2010 Olympics and feared actions against Canada's seal hunt. As a measure of the compromise of government secrets available to private intelligence agencies, Stratfor emails suggest the company would use full access to FBI files on PETA, who have been labeled terrorists for the convenience of the massive American pharmaceutical industry. The company brags about its possession of top-secret classified American documents, including information on drone strikes and materials from Osama bin Laden's safe house. We await the investigation and prosecution of Stratfor for these breaches of American law and others. Instead, the email shows a close collusion between several government agencies and Stratfor in a campaign to capture and jail Julian Assange of WikiLeaks. Stratfor's Vice President for Counterterrorism and Corporate Security, Fred Burton, is a former Deputy Chief of the Department of State's Counterterrorism Division for the Diplomatic Security Service. WikiLeaks has found a secret email from early 2011 from Burton saying a sealed indictment against Julian Assange has already been issued by a secret grand jury in the United States. In expletive-laced emails, Burton plots with others to bankrupt Assange, to have his Australian citizenship revoked, to have Assange extradited to the U.S. for a lengthy prison term, if not for life. Julian Assange has been held in Britain for more than a year, waiting on a case for extradition to Sweden on sex charges, which even Stratfor employees, according to the released emails, do not believe. I'm Alex Smith. Today on Radio EcoShock, you will hear about the brave new world of the privatization of intelligence services, global corruption, and abuse of media for propaganda, big corporations, and private gain. This whole program lets you hear what mainstream media fails to deliver. You can hear critical excerpts from a media press conference in London, February 27, 2012. The hackers group Anonymous got into 5 million emails of Stratfor, where security was ridiculously lax. They delivered the whole batch to WikiLeaks, who organized a team of more than 25 world media outlets to analyze the mountains of information. The press conference featured journalists from the U.S., Britain, Italy, Spain, and Lebanon. Also presenting were the media activist group The Yes Men and U.K. charities representing the victims of the 1984 Bhopal pesticide horror. They were all spied on by Stratfor on behalf of the Dow Chemical Company, current owners of the still poisonous Bhopal site in India. You need to understand how corporations and big governments team up against their own citizens to preserve the rights and the profits of the 1%. Before we hear the other activists and journalists, Let's get back to the opening remarks by Julian Assange of WikiLeaks.
On the surface, Stratfor presents itself as something else. While it always started out as a private intelligence organization, it has erected a cover that it is simply a provider of intelligence publications, yes, to government and to military organizations, but also to private organizations and even universities. But the global intelligence files reveal that its roots as a private intelligence organization are strong and are not being dispensed with in any manner whatsoever. In fact, when we look at the accounting data from this organization, we can see that historically, the majority of its income has come from its private clients. Who are those private clients? Well, yes, they include oil companies, the U.S. Air Force, Lockheed Martin, Raytheon, Bank of America, and so on. But they also include the U.S. Marines, which Stratfor states that it is preparing the forecast for, the three-year forecast for its commander. It includes the Dow Chemical Corporation, and Stratfor spies or monitors activists seeking redress over the Bhopal tragedy, which killed thousands in India some 25 years ago. It includes other activists, corporate clients in the United States that spy on activist organizations, or wish Stratfor to spy on activist organizations. So this information that I have told you just now came out in our press release early this morning. But in this publishing endeavor, where we have pulled together some 25 media organizations and more being announced in the coming days, information is coming out all the time. In fact, at noon, at the beginning of this press conference, we released a new discovery made last night. Stratfor was hired by the Coca-Cola Corporation to monitor and assess PETA activists in relation to the 2009 Vancouver Olympics. In particular, Stratfor's Vice President of Intelligence, the ex-Department of State Diplomatic Security Service officer and agent Fred Burton, offered access to the FBI's classified investigation on PETA operatives. The questions from Coca-Cola were, what is the number of PETA supporters in Canada? How many of these are inclined towards activism? The links between PETA in Canada and PETA in the US or elsewhere? PETA's methodology for planning and executing activism? And the risk of non-PETA hangers-on? The Yes Men and some Bhopal activists who are here today were also monitored by Stratfor, and they will tell you about those experiences. Stratfor has engaged in a number of actions and discussions in relation to WikiLeaks and to me personally. The detail of that will be coming out over the following days, but there are more than 4,000 emails discussing WikiLeaks and our activities. The interconnection between Stratfor and government, Stratfor and the US government, has made that a real issue. This is an organization that does not just collect information, collecting information through bribes, through insiders. It is also an organization that acts on that information to subvert particular groups, including WikiLeaks. When we look at the News of the World scandal, we must see, in relation to private intelligence organizations like Stratfor, that this is small cheese. Stratfor set up an international payment laundering network going through the Bahamas. You can check email ID 1409763. Through Switzerland, and through prepaid credit cards used to pay off its informers in different countries. Stratfor, according to its own internal documentation, spent more than $100,000 a year on such intelligence acquisition-related costs. Some sources are put on monthly retainers. Geronimo, an informant handled by the Vice President of Intelligence, Fred Burton, the former State Department agent, was paid $1,200 per month to be an informant for Stratfor. Another example, and these are all released on our on the WikiLeaks website, and more are being released as we speak, a $500 payment on the 15th of December 2011. The accounting number for Stratfor's payment to informants is 52000. The description is cost of sales colon intelligence. That particular payoff was handled by Jen Richmond, and the document ID is 1431520. Rather than steal the thunder of our other partners, I will now hand over to them. Is the connection to Lebanon ready?
That was Julian Assange speaking at the WikiLeaks press conference titled The Global Intelligence Files in London, February 27th. This is Radio EcoShock. Leaks of emails from the private intelligence company Stratfor reveal the company spies on activist groups and nonprofits, even charities, helping medical treatment for victims of corporate accidents.
Well, joining us live from Paris now is Jude Finisterre. He's a spokesman for Dow Chemicals, which took over Union Carbide. Good morning to you. A day of commemoration in Bhopal. Do you now accept responsibility for what happened?
Steve, yes. Today is a great day for all of us at Dow, and I think for millions of people around the world as well. It's 20 years since the disaster, and today I'm very, very happy to announce that for the first time, Dow is accepting full responsibility for the Bhopal catastrophe. We have a $12 billion plan to finally, at long last, fully compensate the victims, including the 120,000 who may need medical care for their entire lives, and to fully and swiftly remediate the Bhopal plant site. Now, when we acquired Union Carbide 3 years ago, we knew what we were getting, and it's worth $12 billion. $12 billion. We have resolved to liquidate Union Carbide, this nightmare for the world and this headache for Dow, and use the $12 billion to provide more than $500 per victim, which is all that they've seen, a maximum of just about $500 per victim. It is not plenty good for an Indian, as one of our spokespersons unfortunately said a couple of years ago. In fact, it pays for 1 year of medical care. We will adequately compensate the victims. Furthermore, we will perform a full and complete remediation of the Bhopal site, which, as you mentioned, has not been cleaned up. When Union Carbide abandoned the site 20 years ago, or 16 years ago, they left tons of toxic waste, which continues. The site continues to be used as a playground by children. Water continues to be drunk from the groundwater underneath. It's a mess, Steve. And
it's a mess, certainly, Jude. That's good news that you have finally accepted responsibility. Some people would say too late. It's 3 years, yes. Almost 4 years on. How soon is your money going to make a difference to the people in Bhopal?
Well, as soon as we can get it to them, Steve. We've begun the process of liquidating Union Carbide. This is, as you mentioned, late, but it's the only thing we can do.
Yes, the world has longed to hear that Dow Chemical has done the right thing. Unfortunately, the BBC was taken in yet again by the Yes Men, the media activist group. Stratfor was called in to investigate them. From the WikiLeaks press conference, here is Mike Bonanno of the media activist, The Yes Men.
We're going to move on to Mike Bonanno of The Yes Men, who has also, I understand, got some of the Bhopal activists here as well.
Yes. When we heard that we were being monitored by an intelligence agency, it wasn't that big a surprise. One always sort of suspects that the government might be listening to you, especially in the United States. We grew up in the Cold War. What one doesn't expect is that it's not the government listening to you. It's a network of unaccountable private corporations, and their only set of standards is their bottom line. And there's incredible documents in the emails that we were looking at last night that reveal that they really do stop at nothing if it's profitable. And if one of the more entertaining documents is a glossary of intelligence terms. And in that glossary of intelligence terms, many of the terms are followed by statements on what might or might not be profitable. And they talk about basically cooking the books, improving information, making it sound better to clients simply so that they can make money. So we're not necessarily talking about good intelligence. We're talking about a lot of intelligence, because more intelligence means more money. That doesn't mean that it's smart. And among the things I consider not smart are spying on victims of the Bhopal catastrophe. Dow Chemical, of course, is concerned. They're concerned about their reputation, rightfully so. They caused the largest industrial accident in history, and they didn't clean up the mess in Bhopal. So now there are two generations of victims. The first generation of victims were the gas victims. The second generation of victims were victims of water contamination from the plant site that they abandoned with all the chemicals still in place. One of those victims is here today. Farah Edwards Khan is here, and there's four activists from the International Campaign for Justice in Bhopal here today. That's why there wasn't room on the stage for them. But I'm going to cede my seat to one of them shortly. And Colin Toogood is also here. He's from the Bhopal Medical Appeal. So he's partially in charge of trying to get the victims aid money for their primary activity, which is called the Sambhavna Trust. It is a hospital for the victims of the gas catastrophe. And then Indra Sinha, who also started the Bhopal Medical Appeal and the International Campaign for Justice in Bhopal. He's a Booker-listed prize-winning author of a book called Animals People, which was about the Bhopal catastrophe. So in short, I think that, you know, the Yes Men, we were targeted because we had impersonated Dow Chemical in the past in order to make a mockery of the way they hadn't cleaned up the mess in Bhopal. And reading the intelligence, it's kind of comic. I mean, sometimes they're really looking at details. They did things like subscribe to our email list. They, monitored where we were going to be. There's a tremendous amount of information about things like what speech we were giving at what college or what university. There's no information on whether there was somebody there to listen to it, but the point was to get Dow some data so that Dow could decide how they wanted to monitor us. In terms of the Bhopal activists, I think there's some really interesting things about the way they're monitoring. Some of it's comic, again, and since we make films that are mainly comedy, these always stick out for me. For example, they monitored in 393642, in case anybody wants to look this up. I don't think you will, but they monitored somebody called UK activist Ian Jarvis. They were reading his blog. UK activist Ian Jarvis posted a new item to his blog reporting on his stay at the Sambhavna Clinic. That's the health clinic I mentioned. The post was solely about the workings of the clinic's environmentally friendly clothes washer. So, I mean, this gives you a sense of the kind of detail that they were reporting to Dow. Even when they considered it not useful information, they still reported it. Now, on the other hand, stuff that was a little bit more useful gets more interesting. Rachna Dhingra, who is an activist in Bhopal, emailed the ICGJB, that's the International Campaign for Justice in Bhopal's distribution list, with an item that has nothing to do with the Bhopal issue. She passed along a post from a left-wing U.S. blog discussing a U.S. Chamber of Commerce letter to Cass Sunstein, administrator of the Office of Information and Regulatory Affairs, telling him to block the regulation of extremely dangerous chemicals in consumer plastics, i.e. phthalates and the BPA. Dow is mentioned at the end of the post, along with P&G, as having contributed millions to the chamber's war chest in recent years. Now, the reason that I find this one interesting is that this points out what they're interested in, and this is the relationship between governments, between these corporations, and between regulatory agencies. They obviously want to have an effect. They want to allow things like phthalates to keep being distributed unregulated in the U.S., and so I think that there are some revealing details. And as a final note, I just find it shocking that they would consider themselves to be a journalistic organization or that they would portray themselves that way. And Stratfor's release this morning to counter the WikiLeaks release, you know, they end by saying, "We want to assure everyone that Stratfor is committed to recovering from a hack and rebuilding trust with the public and will continue to do what we do best, produce and publish industry-leading analysis of international affairs." And I ask Stratfor, you know, when they're reading emails that we send to our mailing list, is that really publishing industry-leading analysis of international affairs? I don't think so. I think it has nothing to do with that. And I think we're frustrated, angry, and we'd like to see these intelligence agencies regulated.
That was Mike Bonanno of the Yes Men at yesmen.org. You are listening to Radio EcoShock Highlights, lately edited for radio, from the WikiLeaks press conference in London, February 27th. Many corporate and government relationships became clear that day. Stratfor claims publicly to be a media group, although you and I never read their publications unless we can pay thousands of dollars for their newsletter. Inside their own emails, however, the top executives make clear their roots as a private spy agency vying for global supremacy. Now a short clip from Stefania from the Italian news magazine L'Espresso.
So good morning, my name is Stefania. I'm working for the Italian news magazine L'Espresso, and I want to just give you a picture about this material. So when I got access to this database, at the beginning I thought, well, it is rather dull, but when I started searching, I realized that if you go deep in this database, you can find very interesting information, like that one you can find in a secure list. The secure list is a list where there are the most sensitive information, information that normally are not to be published. It's not, you can read this information, this kind of insights, in the bulletin published by the Stratfor. It is just internal information. In some of these emails in the secure list, you can understand that Stratfor got access to material about the seized in the Osama bin Laden safe house. You can understand that they have top-level sources in the FBI mentioning information, telling them information about Julian, about his case. You can realize that these people have information about a drone attack 5 months before their actual attack on a terrorist. And I want to, some of the story are like a thriller, like for example when there is an email in the secure list mentioning the case of a former federal judge, Sam Kent. Sam Kent, he's the first federal judge found guilty of serious crime in the U.S. And this judge tells the story, linking his story to the fact that he ruled a heavy case against Halliburton. This is, information is not for publication, is in the secure list, and this list is indeed very sensitive. And this list makes you realize that Stratfor is not only a media organization like they are trying to frame themselves. I mean, we don't have clients. In this list, they put all the information for clients, or sensitive information for clients. We are a media organization. We have readers. We have not clients. We don't gather material about monitoring movements like Yes Men, like movements.org, which is another organization monitored. We don't have clients. We have just readers.
That was a small part of the analysis by the Italian media partner with WikiLeaks, L'Espresso, regarding the millions of emails from the servers of the global intelligence company Stratfor. Carlos Enrico Bayo of the former Spanish newspaper Publico, now published as web-only, is next.
We're now moving to Carlos Enrique Bayo of Publico in Spain.
Hello, good morning. Well, really, it's been exciting. I'm Carlos Enrique Bayo of Publico, Spain. It's been exciting to work with these materials because although it's very difficult to dig in, as he has just said, we have been struck by the fact that most of the money that came into Stratfor was from public sources, because most of the customers are government offices, agencies, ministries, the military, etc. So it's public money. What Stratfor receives for many subscriptions for its services and analysis. Public money from many countries, and especially European nations that funds and gives huge profits to a private company that acts as a shadow CIA and basically protects U.S. and U.S. companies' interests around the world. Public money used for the benefit of American individuals using dirty tricks in espionage, and that is not journalism, used without the knowledge of the citizens and, well, the taxpayers of these countries. Moreover, many of those institutional customers became, in fact, assets of Stratfor, giving the company's analysts confidential, reserved, privileged information on the governments or agencies or institutions interests and activities. Their feedback to Stratfor's analysts give them the insider's materials and information later this same company uses and sells to other clients, as they call them. So our public institutions are not only financing the shadow CIA, but also giving for free the very source of the wealth. Finally, the way they work, it's very revealing that they are not a media company. They are not journalists. The field agent's instructions given by the founder and owner of Stratfor, Mr. Friedman, stress that those spies have to use any means, including sexual relations, to, as he says, take control of the sources. He means informants, of course, not sources. So the undercover agents are using psychological methods to take control of the people who are informants. It's hardly a coincidence, I believe, that the only means the U.S. has found to extradite Mr. Assange out of Britain is an accusation of improper sexual relations. And that kind of instructions given by someone with close links to the American Secret Services must indeed be standard operation material for American spies all over the world, we guess. Well, our main story today, as we are a news media company in Spain, was about the fact that Stratfor senior analysts are surprised of the extreme hardline positions of former Prime Minister, Spanish Prime Minister José María Aznar, one of the three knights of the war in Iraq with Blair and Bush. In matters of counterterrorism, they found him even more hardcore, quote-unquote, that was the word they used, than the Israelis, which they thought very hardline, of course. That's shocking enough, as it came from an intelligence company closely related with the neocon ideologists, like Karl Rove, who is a very close friend to Friedman, that pushed forward the war on terror, where they, well, we could document, as journalists, torture, and renditions, and many other violations of human rights in Guantanamo, Bagram Air Base, and many other places. So we have the knowledge that this is not a media company. This is an intelligence agency where the espionage has been privatized. It's like another privatization of a public service, in this case a secret service, which has been privatized for the benefit, for the enrichment, to make wealth for individuals. That is not journalism and will never be. Thank you.
This is Radio Ecoshock covering the WikiLeaks press conference in London, February 27th, 2012. You just heard Carlos Enrique Bayo from the Publico in Spain. We will now hear from three activists helping victims of the 1984 and ongoing Bhopal chemical disaster in India, as introduced by Mike Bonanno of the Yes Men.
I do want to bring them on. I just want to mention one more thing. You were talking about how they're receiving, you know, money is coming in from the client, and then they're selling information on to other clients. But at the same time, that wasn't enough for them. There is documentation of them setting up their own, basically their own hedge fund to trade on information that they were getting. Among the millions of leaked emails are some that reveal dubious financial practices, including an apparent insider trading scheme with Goldman Sachs managing director Shay Morantz, who joined Stratfor's board of directors and invested substantially more than $4 million in a scheme called StratCap. And this is a quote, "What StratCap will do is use our Stratfor's intelligence and analysis to trade in a range of geopolitical instruments," wrote Stratfor's CEO George Friedman. StratCap was designed through a complex offshore share trade structure to appear legally independent, but Friedman in these documents assures his top staff that to do not think of StratCap as an outside organization. It will be integral. It will be useful to you. We are already working on mock portfolios and trades. This StratCap fund was to launch very soon in 2012. And let me now introduce the Bhopal activists, Colin, Indra, and Farah. Maybe start with Colin since he's right there. Thanks.
Hi, my name's Colin Toogood. And
can you stand, Colin?
I represent the Bhopal Medical Appeal. Now, the first thing to point out, the interesting thing to point out, is that the Bhopal Medical Appeal is a very, very small charity, very small UK charity, and we raise money for a medical appeal. So in the first instance, that would really make you want to question why we have a company like this sniffing around us. Now, the answer, of course, is because we are still looking for some form of justice for the Bhopal disaster. In fact, in our case, it's not just a question of justice as an abstract notion. There are still people being poisoned out there. It's a genuine live medical issue. So the big question is, why are they sniffing around us? And the answer can only be that there's something to hide. But I also would question, as was raised earlier, the value and the veracity of some of the so-called intelligence. You know, we, the Bhopal Medical Appeal, work quite closely with the International Campaign for Justice. The more hardcore activists and the ones you might more easily expect to be being, snooped around. But, yeah, the intelligence we share, it's facts. It's not just some, it's facts around the case. It's things which can, we're extremely thorough with our research. It's things that we can stand up and speak in a court of law. It's not just a load of stuff, shadowy information about things that we might be doing. But to pick up on that, the funny thing about it is the quality of some of this stuff. The information is not great. I mean, they even get people's names wrong, for instance. But it's also what they do with the information. And an example I'll give you was something that we did in 2009 with the Yes Men. It was a stunt to produce a bottle of fake mineral water product called Bhopal. But it's spelled B'O'Pal. And we decided that we would challenge the boss of Dow UK to drink some actual Bhopal, toxic Bhopal water in this fake bottle. Seemed like a great idea. And we worked on a kind of pretty much a sort of an escape from cold, its level of security, up until, the day before we were going out to Staines to present this bottle. And when we got there, we found that they'd shut the entire organisation for the day. Now, one, that tells you, as we suspected anyway, they'd been snooping around us and they knew what we were up to. But the second, as I say, it makes you question how smart they are. I mean, is that really the right thing to do? And the answer to that is no, because, of course, the airwaves, the internet, of course, was just alive with this for days. I mean, there was, 15, 20 pages of results on Google along the lines of activists shut Dow down for a day. So just to conclude, I think it's extremely, it's depressing that a company like this is sniffing around us. And I think that really what we would ultimately ask is, what is the value in that? And how much is it costing? Wouldn't it be better PR just to get out and clean Bhopal up?
Hello, my name is Farah Edwards Khan, and I am from Bhopal. And I was there when the accident happened in 1984. I was 10 years old. And I saw the horror that happened then. And I see the horror that happens now. And I am not surprised at what is happening. I know that Dow is dirty, because this is what they've done to the children of Bhopal. They are a dirty company, and they've messed up Bhopal. They've messed up around the factory. They have made a huge and terrible mess which they don't want to clean up. I am really angry with them. And I'm really grateful to WikiLeaks that they have brought this out into the open. Now what, Dow? Now what?
Hello, yeah. My name's Indra. I've been involved with the Bhopali since 1993 or 94, helping to raise money, along with Colin and others, for the Bhopal Medical Appeal, which run the clinics in Bhopal, and also involved with the campaign. And with my other hat on as a writer, as a novelist, I wrote a book called Animals People, which had some success, which was based loosely on what had happened there. I was trying to tell the story like a kind of parable. And what I'd like to say vis-a-vis Dow, Bhopal and the media is this, that Dow have long since realized that if they can stay out of courts because of their allies in government and their ability just to complicate and manipulate cases. So what should have been a legal battle about issues like inherited liability and responsibility for contamination have become a PR battle. And so they're using the media to play sound bites, which are actually ultimately meaningless, but very few people question, because there has to be a level of understanding to be able to decipher them. That's one thing. They've also used the media in a sort of flyaway, really. They once tried to portray us as terrorists. I was shortly after 9/11, and the New Jersey something ledger, I've forgotten the name of the thing, ran a story which said Bhopal's terrorists stormed our plant. And apparently these Bhopal terrorists had taken the guards captive, had stormed into the plant demanding, making some demand, had asked for coffee, and when the coffee was not to their liking, they'd shot someone, shouting, "The little things in life matter." After this, they revealed that this is actually an exercise with the FBI and SWAT teams and what have you. But not before, you know, they'd actually made that smear. So, you know, again, I think it helps to make the point, what the work that Julian's done with WikiLeaks and these new revelations, that some of the world's poorest people for nearly 30 years now have been fighting a battle, not just against a company, but against its allies in government. We just heard about allies in Goldman Sachs. All the sort of power and money elites and the military on one side, and these people with nothing on the other. So that's where the media could take a deeper interest and look harder, and we're here to help with that.
From the WikiLeaks press conference, we just heard Colin Toogood from the UK charity Bhopal Medical Appeal, then Bhopal survivor Farah Edwards Khan, and UK-based Indra Sinha, author of the Bhopal-based novel Animals People. A reporter asks, are these emails from the private company Stratfor a danger to national security? In his response, WikiLeaks editor-in-chief Julian Assange gives us all a quick lesson on what the words national security have come to mean.
I do believe that national security is much more threatened if our diplomats and militaries and secret agents rely on Stratfor, because even Friedman recognizes that the problem with the sources of our analysts is that have a very low qualification. That means that we don't really evaluate with clarity the situation. That's one of the sentences he uses to admit that their information is low quality. If our governments, our secret services, our diplomats are relying on that information, that really is a threat to our national security.
Whenever this word national security is used, it should be immediately shot down. Are we talking about the security of the entire nation, all its people? Or are we talking about a particular social, economic and political sector of the economy? Because there is a tremendous confusion between these two, and it is used time and time again to try and suggest that the security of all the people in the nation is the same as a particular sector of the economy, namely private intelligence agencies, organizations like Lockheed Martin, Northrop Grumman, Stratfor, and their government equivalents are in fact the security of the nation. That is simply false. In the previous material that WikiLeaks has released, despite all these hysterical outpourings attempting to deflect from the severe exposure of the killings of hundreds of thousands, literally hundreds of thousands of people, we have exposed the deaths of by the US military and other organizations, to instead talk about some speculative hypothetical risks that have proven over the last 2 years to be completely false, completely, utterly false. And yet that smear and that distraction was used all over the world and is embedded in many people's heads. And it's your responsibilities as journalists to not permit that to happen in future, and in fact to undo the willing participation in that sort of hysteria, that sort of neo-McCarthyist hysteria that occurred over the last 2 years. But as for this material, no, we don't perceive there to be any meaningful risks except for those organizations that have committed wrongdoing and need to be taken down.
Now we go to more classic analysis from Julian Assange, the man Attorney General Eric Holder, the Pentagon, and the CEO of Stratfor hope to jail for life for his revelations of the American emails on the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan.
It's on the How to Read It section. So if you go to wikileaks.org/GI files and you go to the sort of how to interpret the data, you'll see glossary, and there's a link to that. It's a PDF.
Next question. Hello. It's a question for anyone on the panel that wants to answer it. Trying your best to put aside wishful thinking. Is this a mortal blow for Stratfor? The Italian lady mentioned that they have been unable to protect the sources, and that's their first job as an intelligence agency. Can they recover from this?
It's interesting to think about what the company perceives itself as doing, and it perceives itself in a very long letter sent in August or September 2011 to its staff by the CEO, George Friedman, as being an intelligence organization, growing to be an intelligence organization, and having a syndicated intelligence newsletter on the side, but also to be a hedge fund. And Stratfor got together with a then director in 2009 of Goldman Sachs. What's his name? Do you remember?
Shay Morantz.
Shay Morantz, to take the secret intelligence that Stratfor was collecting in part by paying insiders, and use that to invest in a wide range of geopolitical financial instruments, according to its own descriptions, and currency and bonds. And that is something that would be integral to the organization, that they were developing over 2 years, that they have, we have published the corporate structures for them, and they involve a complex offshore arrangements extending even to South Africa. I mean, it is completely out of control. It is totally absurd that sort of situation could arise. And there's even some awareness about how close they're running to all being arrested, where George Friedman, and you can see the quote in our press release, and the full text is available, talks about how they were worried about the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, presumably in relation to bribing informants, and they had hired lawyers, in fact, because they were so worried about it, and that the CEO didn't want to, quote, be doing the perp walk. I mean, it's extraordinary that that culture has flourished. I mean, it is like Enron, that some very cowboy-like culture has developed within Stratfor, a sort of people playing James Bond in the most absurd manner, in many cases, the most ineffective, hopeless manner. And also, they decide that they're going to be some kind of James Bond villains by setting up their own captured investment fund at the same time that they'll use all this intelligence from to pull in. And if we look at their press release from this morning, we see that they are saying that they simply refuse to answer any questions about the material whatsoever. Now, is that a media organization, or is that the response of a media organization? They refuse to answer anything about the practice. Let's look at News International. Now, News International has actually answered a lot of questions, perhaps reluctantly, but it has answered many. This organization is saying, no, we don't discuss that sort of information. And an intelligence agency would say, we refuse to confirm or deny. And they say they refuse to confirm or deny because that is their culture. They are a private intelligence organization. But if we look at Fred's rule number two, the vice president of intelligence, this guy, Fred Burton, who has been gunning for us, he comes from the State Department, works for Stratfor. Fred's rule number two, admit nothing, deny everything, and make counter-accusations. What did you see in the press release today? That email is 2539287, released today.
Is that in your press release?
That one is not in the press release. We found that this morning. Thought it might be handy for this event.
At this WikiLeaks London press conference, Mike Bonanno of the Yes Men adds to remarks made by Julian Assange.
I'd like to just add one more thing to that answer, and that it's regardless of whether Stratfor is done after this, regardless of whether they have to fold as a company, what should be targeted, and what I hope the journalists will be looking into more, is the revolving door between these businesses and government. What the end that should be seen or foreseen by this, hopefully, is that relationship, the problems that we have with privatizing the intelligence industry, which has resulted in this unintelligent result.
And also links with intelligence. For example, we want to ask what kind of information these ambassadors, these journalists, these Secret Service agents are providing Stratfor. For which client?
Yeah,
we don't know. Maybe they provide basic open source information. Maybe we don't know, basically.
Julian Assange of WikiLeaks continues.
Well, there's a question, who's next? There's Stratfor in this internal cowboy culture, this hopeless informant protecting arrangements and their payment laundering system through the Bahamas, has now been exposed. But there are others that are lower profile, but in fact financially larger in size, like the Kroll Group. So what's happening there? I presume the same basic methods are done under the surface, but perhaps with a little bit more care, so they haven't been exposed. But we shouldn't stop at Stratfor. These sorts of organizations, because of their secrecy, corruption flourishes within them. But the other thing, and in fact it's the one thing that has really saved the world, is that incompetence also flourishes in the dark. So we can see that this sort of opportunistic incompetence within Stratfor, from email number 1061018, which we released today at midday, random business idea, network security. I was reading a solid Forbes article on Assange and said that a large number of deep pocket corporations were looking into leak-focused network security after these WikiLeaks episodes. I was wondering if it is possible for us to get some of that leak-focused gravy train. This is an obvious fear sale, so that's a good thing. And we have something to offer that IT security companies don't. Mainly our focus on counterintelligence and surveillance. That Fred and Shtick, this Fred is Fred Burton, diplomatic security service guy, know better than anyone on the planet. We did a lot of good work with all the personal executive security analysis, da-da-da-da-da. In fact, I'm not so sure that leaking is an IT problem that requires an IT solution. Completely incompetent, opportunistic, and that is the culture within this organization. The problem is, it's also a very influential organization. Its intelligence newsletter alone has some 200,000 subscribers in very influential positions.
Yes, 300,000.
300,000.
Yes.
Malcolm Turnbull, for instance, is just off the top of my head, who's the deputy leader of the Australian opposition, and the media previously leader of the Australian opposition, was a subscriber. So these people are being influenced in their activities, and they're also, some of them are also giving back. And when they give back, it doesn't just go off to... So when someone in the State Department gives Fred Burton information about WikiLeaks, it doesn't necessarily just stay within Stratfor or go to other parts of the American government. No, as we've seen in these other cases, it goes to the private clients of Stratfor, private corporations like Coca-Cola and Dow Chemical and Lockheed Martin.
So, Liam Vaughan from Bloomberg. Can you speak a bit more about the connection with Goldman Sachs? And I'm just trying to understand, is the suggestion that this guy was a managing director and then got involved with Stratfor, or is there a potential connection between Goldman Sachs as a bank and as a company and Stratfor?
So, if you look into this, no. I think I'm the only person who's looked into this. So, this guy is a Texas-originated Goldman Sachs director. And he was director in 2009. We don't know if he was a director in 2010. And in 2011, he joined Stratfor's board. He, according to an email sent by the Stratfor CEO to employees, he invested $2 million US into Stratfor itself. And $2 million into Stratfor itself.
More than $4 million. Oh, yeah.
And substantially more than $2 million into StratCap, the strategic investment captive firm operating within the Stratfor offices on intelligence collected by Stratfor. The degree of involvement by Goldman Sachs, the corporation, we don't know. We do know that this one director of Goldman Sachs, while he was at Goldman Sachs, was involved in this. And in fact, the CEO of Stratfor says that it was the Goldman Sachs director's idea to take Stratfor Intelligence and make a captive strategic investment fund to invest in these geopolitical instruments.
Do you have any notion of who would have been privy to that information at that fund?
There is a lot of email about it, discussing it, prospective shareholding structures, share pyramids and layouts of this. We have already released some of those, but we'll be releasing others as time goes by. An interesting connection, by the way, Thomson Reuters is a Stratfor Confederation partner. Nearly all the other partners are small things in the Stans, Radio B92 in Serbia. They're all organizations which have a very pro-US agenda. Thomson Reuters is very interesting because it is vastly larger than the others. It is a UK-based firm, and it is meant to be independent. But perhaps it is worth looking what happened when Thomson merged with Reuters, because Thomson is an information provider to clients. It is not a news organization, per se. Reuters was a news organization. And when these two things came together, perhaps something else happened. When we released the collateral murder video, the editor-in-chief of Reuters, as you may remember, that video exposed the murder of the killing of two Reuters journalists, the murder of one, by US forces in Iraq. The editor of Reuters did not make a statement demanding for an investigation into what had happened to the deaths of his journalists. And this was a cause of considerable upset within Reuters. The immediately former head of Reuters said, "What is going on here? Why hasn't the editor come out to demand an investigation into the slaying of Reuters journalists? Is this a Thomson effect?" So that's a question. Has Reuters been contaminated by its merger with Thomson in the same way that Stratfor is contaminated? It seems that Stratfor was contaminated from birth because there was no merger. But are other media organizations getting into this sort of business of having intelligence work for private clients on the side and then news work here and not keeping these things air-gapped from each other, but rather swapping data?
This is Radio EcoShock. You just heard Julian Assange of WikiLeaks speaking at a major press conference in London, February 27th. The organization just released the first batch of 5 million emails hacked from one of the world's largest private intelligence companies, Stratfor. One of the media partners in the WikiLeaks release is Rolling Stone magazine. Their reporter Michael Hastings found emails and other evidence that the Department of Homeland Security has been monitoring the Occupy movement. Apparently, the DHS wants a report on the impact of Occupy on the financial services sector. Wait a minute. Wasn't the Department of Homeland Security set up to protect all citizens against terrorist attacks? And now it has become yet another domestic spy agency on behalf of the banks and Wall Street? Watch what you tweet, because Big Brother and his dog Stratfor are spying on you. Michael Hastings reports DHS was following all social media, including Facebook, which no doubt cooperates. Just more fodder for the giant database in the sky of ordinary taxpayers who object to paying off bad debts from banking industry gambling. Find those links in my blog at ecoshock.info. Like some journalists in this press conference, some critics find Stratford's analysis to be misinformed or even a joke. In an article called "Mixed Strategy" by David P. Goldman, Stratfor CEO George Friedman's strange predictions are revealed. Friedman says Poland, of all places, will be the new powerhouse of Europe, while an alliance of Turkey and Japan will face off against the United States. It's all in the book, folks, available as a bonus when you sign up for a newsletter subscription. Max Fisher, writing in The Atlantic, simply says Stratfor is a joke and so is WikiLeaks for taking it seriously. Well, their analysis may be incompetent, but politicians believe it, and the U.S. Marines let Stratfor do their long-range planning. As Assange says, Quote, these organizations, because of their secrecy, corruption flourishes within them. But the other thing, and in fact, it is the one thing that has really saved the world, is that incompetence also flourishes in the dark.
You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org. We'll wrap up with a short summary of what STRAT4 is by Julian Assange.
Mr. Assange, you said a lot of the income of STRAT4 comes from the public purse. Do you have any idea of the figures involved with the money flows from the American governments, perhaps other governments?
We have some ideas. So there are various financial reports that we are working on. Just last night, we discovered a series of about 30 of their high invoices, about 30 of them. So top one's $500,000 for some oil companies, U.S. Air Force, major U.S. Corporations, and so on. So we will get those figures out, and they are there. It is just a matter of coming to find the client list. At the moment, we have invoices for the major clients. But looking at that, just those invoices, a substantial amount of money comes from government organizations and also a substantial amount from oil companies. And
would you say the majority of that money is from government?
I couldn't say at this stage, but it is substantial.
We have verified that there's a real chaos inside the ministries of defense or foreign affairs who subscribe. And sometimes we found invoices for different people or in the same organization, government, ministry, that don't know each other, don't know the other one is also a subscriber. And so they are paying several times the same subscription because they believe they are getting such a private, secret, reserved information that they don't tell other people in their same institution.
STRAT4 has three, when looking at this data, one must be careful not to confuse what is going on. So STRAT4 has the three principal types of incomes or people who pay it. So those are private clients that it does task work for. For example, Coca-Cola, trying to find out about PETA. We want you to find out this, this, and this, and this. It also has private meetings to give private briefings. That are not tasked. So we want you to tell us what you know about a particular situation, but we're not tasking you to go out and collect additional information. And then there's the sort of intelligence newsletter that it runs that anyone can subscribe to. But there's sort of corporate subscriptions and corporate packages and so on.
I'm Alex Smith. You can download a free MP3 of this special coverage of the London press conference by WikiLeaks from our website at ecoshock.org. Look in our program archives. Assange raised a critical question for all of us who read the news. As international agencies like Reuters began to lose revenues to free distribution on the net, and their newspaper clients also suffered losses, many are tempted by or are taken over by a profitable business selling information first or exclusively to wealthy corporations and governments. How much of what is known is published? Are we, the public, always the last to know and the least informed? Why do so many public agencies pay so much money to get information produced at the taxpayer's expense and supposedly protected by law? When will those who corrupt government officials, journalists, and insiders freely taking classified information to sell to the highest bidder be investigated and charged? Will the American Congress investigate STRAT4 and establish rules to govern private intelligence agencies before they govern us? I'm Alex Smith. Find the Global Intelligence Files and support the freedom of Julian Assange at the website wikileaks.org. Thank you for listening.